Tune in to CKUT 90.3 FM, Tuesdays, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., for a special Black History Month edition of the Montreal Sessions. The month kicks off on February 1st with the best in reggae and soca with your hosts, Production Sounds and Soca Head. Week 2, February 8th, Wizzy Moonchaser.
Toot-toot-twang! This is why we are. This is why we are. Secret station ever had. 90.3 ever had. Why? Why? This is why we are. This is why we are. Secret ever had. 90.3 ever had. Why? Why? You guys can love me, so they know, say we got. We listen to this station, it's a station well and
okay.
Hear good music. This is why they had.
Yo, this is Junior Reed, and when I'm in Montreal, I stay tuned to C-Cut 90.3 FM. Montreal, stay alive. With music, with music, with music.
Wait a minute, that's too fast.
Now what?
Kick it over here, baby pop!
CKUT, yo. Yo, this is for your mind, soul, and spirit. Plus your positive vibes. Masters at work, you gotta hear it. And West Indian rhythms on Saturday night. Roots, rock, reggae, I keep it tight. Man, child, hitting switches, keep it right. Decipher on a Friday. Psalms of soul, I do it my way. With ill groove on Sunday, I gotta say one way. We stick together. It's for unity in the community on CKUT at 90.3. Man, child, and John Fish. We give you that musical wish to put more music in that dish. So listen to your radio station and simply turn it on. CKUT, word is born, word is born. Y'all enjoy yourselves, love you Montreal. Tune in to CKUT, always.
What is it that gives your life a sense of meaning and purpose? Because once you find that, it puts you in your power place. See, if you know what your life work is, I encourage you to start working on it. If you can't do it all at one time, do just a little bit of it. And if you don't know what it is that you showed up to do, if you don't know why you're here, I encourage you to find out what your purpose is here. What is the meaning of your life? What will be different? Have you ever asked yourself that question? I've done that. I remember coming from a friend of mine's funeral, and I was reflecting on how much time I had left. And I went for a walk in a park thinking about this guy whose life was so promising. And I mean, he wasn't an old guy. He was quite young, in fact. And I thought about all of the things that he said he was going to do, and he never got a chance to do those things. And I started thinking about my own life and how much time I had left to do the things that I would like to do. And at that time, I wasn't sure what my life purpose was, what my life's work was. I wasn't sure about it at that time. And I thought about it quite a lot. I had some idea, but I wasn't convinced that I don't think I felt worthy. I didn't believe that it could be me to do this kind of work that I'm doing right now. And I say to you that if you begin to take a conscious effort to find out what it is that you're supposed to do, I say that it can literally save your life. I said that it can literally save your life. 85% of the American public, according to recent studies, are going to jobs that they hate, working on jobs that do not challenge them. They get sick thinking about going. Because, see, when you go to a job and you already know how far you can go, you can already see that proverbial glass ceiling. See, when you're going someplace and you already know how much you're going to make, you already know how far you can go, you're in a dead-end position. It erodes your self-esteem. It lowers your sense of yourself. It creates some inner turmoil. It creates an emptiness in you. So I say that your life is worth finding what it is that you're supposed to do. And I'm not saying quit your job. I'm saying find it and do just a little bit of it. Just start working at it just a little bit. But do find out what your work is and hold on to it and don't let your dream go. Don't let it go. See, and here's something else I want you to begin to look at. Why is it that most people don't pursue their dreams or don't do better than what they're doing if they're capable of doing it? I think that many of us don't go the next step because we don't know what to do yet. And I say that the reason that we don't even explore the possibility of what to do is because subconsciously we don't believe that it can happen for us and we don't believe that we deserve it. So here's what I'm suggesting. How much time do you spend working on you? How much time do you spend every day working on your dream? In the last 90 days, how many books have you read? In the last year, what new skill or knowledge have you acquired? What kind of investment have you made in you? So I'm saying that as you begin to look at where you want to go, if you want to make it today, and things are changing so fast you have to literally run to stand still, I'm saying that you've got to make some conscious effort to begin to work to develop you. Here's something else. Most people are not living their dreams because of fear, ladies and gentlemen. Fear, limited vision, and lack of self-esteem is what keep most people doing things they don't want to do. The same reason that people stay in relationships where they're abused or they're unhappy or it's unfulfilling, they can't see themselves beyond that relationship. They can't see themselves enjoying life without that person. They think that this is all that they can do. The same reason that people get stuck at a certain level in life, they can't see things being better for them. And they think that this is it and this is all they deserve. This is all they've ever seen. It's been passed on to them. And they think that this is it for them. Oh no, I was looking what Dr. Blanton, Smalley Blanton, who is a colleague of Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, what he said about fear. He said, fear is the most subtle and destructive of all human diseases. Ladies and gentlemen, fear kills dreams. Fear kills hope. Fear put people in the hospital. Fear can age you. Fear, ladies and gentlemen, can hold you back from doing something that you know within yourself that you're capable of doing, but it will paralyze you. And it seemed like you're in a hypnotic spell. And I ask you a question, what is the benefit? What's the benefit of allowing fear to hold you back? What's the benefit of giving up on yourself, of not stepping out on life and taking life on? What is the benefit for you? What's the plus in that? It's one of the things I had to ask myself. See, I didn't want to make any mistakes. I wanted everybody to like me. I wanted to be perfect the first time I did something. It's not going to happen. You're going to make some mistakes. You're going to hurt some folks' feelings. You're going to create some enemies. Whenever you decide that you want to begin to take life on, you've got to ask yourself, how long am I going to allow this to hold me back? I like what Zig Ziglar says. He said, fear is false evidence appearing real. That is an illusion that we create in our mind. It is a state of mind that can be changed. So let's look at how we can begin to take some steps to restructure that fear, to begin to expand our visions of ourselves, to begin to increase our self-esteem. Webster said that self-esteem means confidence and satisfaction in oneself. Look at your life right now. Whatever you've done up to this point in time, your life is working. Whatever you have produced, it came out of you as a result of the kind of person that you have become. It's a result of your choices. It's a result of your consciousness. Now you have to ask yourself, are you satisfied with what you have produced? Is this what you want? Would you like for things to be better than this? Do you believe that you deserve better than this? Are you content? This is it. You don't have to do anything else. That you already resign yourself in life and say, well, I'm happy. I'm not starving like the people in Calcutta. Are you allowing yourself to get off the hook like that? Or do you believe somewhere in the back of your mind or in your heart that there is some other great work for you to do? There's something else that life has for you. And that's why you're here. How do we handle this fear factor? How do we increase our self-esteem? You have to begin to fortify yourself. How do we do that? I believe that you have to begin to consciously monitor your inner conversation and start talking to yourself. Start building yourself up. Sometimes the only good things you will hear about you are the things that you say to you. So I'm saying learn to be your own booster. Start building yourself up. Start encouraging yourself. Start saying, I can do this. I can make this happen. When I started thinking about becoming a speaker, I said, yes, I can do this. I can make this happen. When I start trying to convince myself I can be a businessman after flopping and failing and losing thousands of dollars and feeling stupid and dumb and having people take advantage of me because of what I didn't know, I had to talk to myself because people were saying to me that I was dumb. And somewhere in the back of my mind, I was saying, you're right. Look at what I've done. I had to say, no, Les. Hey, come on, man, get yourself together. You can handle this. You just haven't figured it out yet. It's all right. This is your training period. This is the tuition you have to pay for what you don't know. You can do this. Other people have done it. It doesn't take an Einstein. Get you some people that can teach you some stuff that you don't know. Get you some people that have done it successfully and learn from them. Take some seminars, workshops, read some books on how to manage a business. Change the way you see yourself and begin to tend to the personal details. Understand that nobody's going to take care of your business better than you. And when I start changing that kind of mindset of beating myself up because of my mistakes, and start looking at the possibility of my doing better, of my making the adjustment that would enable me to do what I want to do successfully, things begin to change. And I say, stop beating up on yourself. You do it. I know you do it. I've done it. It's a natural inclination for us to put ourselves down. See, we are born negative, I think, in a negative consciousness because we live in a negative world. Here's some other things, ladies and gentlemen. Begin to guard your mind against negative programming, like turn off the television. Don't watch the news. So you've got to guard the kinds of things that you put in your mind. See, if you don't program your mind will be programmed because human beings are goal-oriented. That's why we die of broken hearts early. That's why we're running through life to early graves. We're going through life, ladies and gentlemen. And I think that Henry David Thoreau said that most men live in quiet desperation. Most of us go through life running scared. So we created this in our minds, false evidence appearing real. We made it real in our minds. That's why Churchill said there's nothing to fear but fear itself. That's the destructive monster. So turn off things that can contribute to your fear. Turn a deaf ear to people that all they can do is talk about how negative things are because they have bought into the consciousness of the world. Start attending workshops, seminars, listening to tapes on a daily basis to begin to recondition your mind, to retrain your thinking. Faith comes by what? Hearing and hearing and hearing. Listen to things that can empower you, that can enable you to create a new reality for yourself and a new life for yourself. You might appear to be strange around most people. You know, most people think you're strange if you're happy today. See, these people have not found their purpose in life. That's why they're grumpy. That's why they're miserable. That's why they're so negative. They're hurting and they want to hurt other people. So start practicing using programs for your mind. Seminars, books, workshops. Keep a journal. Record your thoughts. What's happening with you? Every day when you get up, have a journal near you. See, ladies and gentlemen, we get 3 to 4 thoughts a year that if we would act on those thoughts, they could change our life. What idea are you sitting on? Write your ideas down. And then, once you get that idea, take the leap. Take the leap. See, it's out here in the universe. If you don't take the plunge, I guarantee you, somebody else will. Take the plunge. Go into action. And ladies and gentlemen, you will be surprised at how things will come together. You'll be surprised. Now, you're going to have some difficult challenges. I can tell you that now. Be aware of that. Things are not going to work out exactly right. For a time, they will, sometimes. And that's when life is just playing a game with you. I want you to feel good and relax. But ladies and gentlemen, go into action with your dream. And don't avoid where the fights are. Get in the midst of the fight. Get knocked down so you can learn how to fight, so you can hold your position. See, most people don't get out in the arena of life because they don't want to fight. Most people don't get out there because they don't want to get knocked down. They don't want to be dropped to their knees. But see, you're going to be dropped whether you're on the field or whether or not you're sitting on the sidelines. You're going to be dropped. So at least get dropped for something. See, that's how most people are spectators in life. You don't want to be a spectator. You want to get out in the field where the action is. And you will be amazed. After the struggle, there will be a calm period and things will begin to click for you.
Tonight, Front Page Challenge welcomes the outspoken Negro leader, Malcolm X.
Sir, what's the real reason why you two men split? Is it merely ideological or is it personality? What else?
Probably personality. It was not the statement that originally was given by the movement when we split. More personality than anything else.
You've called people like Martin Luther King, who just got a Nobel Peace Prize, an Uncle Tom. Is this correct, first?
Well, I'd rather say that in the States, there's a law that has recently been passed, or a decision handed down by the court, wherein if you call someone an Uncle Tom, they can sue you for libel.
Well,
so I never refer to them as Uncle Toms. I would say that Uncle Martin is my friend.
Uncle Martin is your friend, yet you would disagree with his approach to what he wants to accomplish.
Definitely. If his approach would bring about what the black man in America needs to completely eliminate the problem that we have, I would say well and good. But I very much doubt that anyone who adopts the approach that Martin Luther King has been teaching to our people in that country can point to any meaningful gains that has actually served to solve the problem.
Black Muslims have sometimes, whether you have or not, and I think probably you have sometimes, it seemed to me, been preaching hate to meet hate.
I don't advocate any kind of hate.
But there's a lot of talk that sounds very much like it.
No, I think that the guilt complex of the American white man is so profound until when you begin to analyze the real condition of the black man in America, instead of the American white man eliminating the causes that create that condition, he tries to cover it up by accusing his accusers of teaching hate. But actually, they're just exposing him for being responsible for what exists.
Well, that's something of an argument. But I've heard speeches made by some of the people of your group. I think I've heard you make speeches. It seemed to me that you were advocating what I would have to describe, I think, as violence to meet the serious injuries that have been done your people, with which I totally agree.
I don't call that violence. I don't in any way encourage black people to go out and initiate acts of aggression indiscriminately against whites. But I do believe that the black man in the United States, and any human being anywhere, is well within his right to do whatever is necessary, by any means necessary, to protect his life and property, especially in a country where the federal government itself has proven that it is either unable or unwilling to protect the lives and property of those human beings.
Just before Pierre takes it, you've got a pretty good fighter and the world's heavyweight champion lined up with you to help out. Yes, Pierre.
Well, Mr. X, if I guess I call you that. Is that a proper appellation?
Yes.
Mr. X? I'm wondering if you still believe, as I think you certainly did at the time you were allied to the black Muslim movement, in a segregated black nation.
No.
In North America.
I don't believe in any form of segregation or any form of racism. I'm against any form of segregation and against racism.
Am I right in saying that the black Muslim movement, which you have left, did believe in that?
Well, Elijah Muhammad taught his followers that the only solution was a separate state for black people. And as long as I thought he genuinely believed that himself, I believed in him and believed in his solution. But when I began to doubt that he himself believed that that was feasible, and I saw no kind of action designed to bring it into existence or bring it about, then I turned in a different direction.
Are you still a Muslim yourself?
Oh, yes. I'm a Muslim. I believe in the religion of Islam, which believes in brotherhood, complete brotherhood of all people. But at the same time that I believe in this brotherhood, I don't believe in forcing my desire for brotherhood upon those who aren't willing to accept it.
Of course, I think the Christians would say that they also believed in brotherhood. What did you say to that?
I'd say they believe in it, but don't practice it.
Well, that'd be a pretty good answer.
Sir, when the muezzin goes up in the minaret twice a day, he cries to the world, "There is but one God, and he is Allah." Do you deny that there is a Christian God?
The muezzin does this five times a day.
Five times, and I only heard him twice.
Well, you were fortunate to hear him twice. But he does this five times a day, and the same God that he says that he expresses the existence of is the God that the Christians profess to believe in themselves, and the God that the Jews believe in, one God, the creator of the universe. The Muslims believe in the God that created the universe, and I think the Christians do, and the Jews do. Now, as long as all of them are talking about the creator, the Jews may call him Jehovah, and Christians may have another name for him. Those who are Arabic-speaking refer to him as Allah. Well, we believe in the same God.
Now, as the Muslim religion advances in the United States, are you modernizing it or sticking with the old faiths? For example, the complete segregation of the sexes.
I think that everything today on this earth is being modernized. Religious principles and practices, as well as political and other things.
Now, when you went to Mecca, this is a very sacred and forbidden city. I tried to get to Mecca myself and certainly didn't make it, not being a Muslim. But how would they accept you as one? You're an American. There are few American Muslims.
This is true. And by being an American and not having not being able to speak the Arabic language, I did strike a snag, a very serious snag. But I was fortunate to have been pretty well known by the officials in Arabia, and they knew too that I had accepted Orthodox Islam. It had been highly publicized in the paper, and I became a guest of the state. I was a guest of Prince Faisal, the present King Faisal, and they made it possible for me to go before the committee, Hajj committee or Hajj court, who examines you and asks you questions about your belief, and if you pass it, then you are okay to go to Mecca.
But it's you would true. Have to have a translator then.
I had one. Then we realizing that our problem in America, that we are black Americans, and we have a problem that goes beyond religion. We formed a group known as the Organization of Afro-American Unity. And the objective of this organization, it's non-religious, number one. Any Negro can belong to it. And the objective of that organization is to bring about a condition that will guarantee respect and recognition of the 22 million black Americans as human beings. We feel that the problem, number one, of the black man in America is beyond America's ability to solve. It's a human problem, not an American problem or a Negro problem. And as a human problem or a world problem, we feel that it should be taken out of the jurisdiction of the United States government and the United States courts and taken into the United Nations in the same manner that the problems of the black man in South Africa, Angola, and other parts of the world, and even the way they're trying to bring the problems of the Jews in Russia into the United Nations because of violation of human rights. We believe that our problem is one not a violation of civil rights, but a violation of human rights. Not only are we denied the right to be a citizen in the United States, we're denied the right to be a human being.
Mr. X, may I thank you very much for coming on our program and perhaps clearing away some of the cobwebs of misconception that some of us might have had about your belief. And I think you're a very sincere man, and it takes a lot of courage to admit a former belief is wrong, and we congratulate you for that and the service you performed tonight in giving us your views. Thank you so much, Mr.
Thank you.
Tune in to CKUT 90.3 FM, Tuesdays, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., for a special Black History Month edition of the Montreal Sessions. The month kicks off on February 1st with the best in reggae and soca with your hosts, Production Sounds and Soca Head. Week 2, February 8th, Wizzy Moonchaser, host of The Morning Detour, broadcast live from DG Kicks, a sneaker store in NDG. The final 2 weeks, 15th and 22nd, are hosted by Stephen Ziplocks Hennessy, educator, creator,
and part of the Ill Groove Garden team. Don't miss it.
Faced with sickle cell anemia, the solution is in our blood. It's a matter of genetics. The more people from the black communities who give blood, the better our chances to find compatible donors to help those affected by this disease. Faced with sickle cell anemia, we can't leave anyone behind. We have to donate. So don't wait. Book an appointment today at hemequebec.qc.ca because giving is in our blood.
Distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, friends and enemies. I want to point out first that I'm very happy to be here this evening, and I'm thankful for the invitation to come here to Detroit this evening. I was in a house last night that was bombed, my own, but it didn't destroy all my clothes at all, but you know what happens when fire dashes through. They get smoky. The only thing I could get my hands on before leaving was what I have on now. And it isn't something that made me lose confidence in what I'm doing, because my wife understands, and I have children from this size on down, and even in their young age, they understand. I think they would rather have a father or a brother or whatever the situation may be who will take a stand in the face of any kind of reaction from narrow-minded people, rather than to compromise and later on have to grow up in shame and in disgrace. So I just ask you to excuse my appearance. I don't normally come out in front of people without a shirt and a tie. I guess that's somewhat a holdover from the Black Muslim movement, which I was in, and that's one of the good aspects of that movement. It teaches you to be very careful and conscious of how you look, which is a positive contribution on their part. But that positive contribution on their part is greatly offset by too many other liabilities. Before I get involved in anything nowadays, I have to straighten out my own position. And which is clear, I am not a racist in any form whatsoever. I don't believe in any form of racism. I don't believe in any form of discrimination or segregation. I believe in Islam. I'm a Muslim. And there's nothing wrong with being a Muslim, nothing wrong with the religion of Islam. That just teaches us to believe in Allah as the God. And those of you who are Christians probably believe in the same God, because I think you believe in the God who created the universe, and that's the one we believe in, the one who created the universe. The only difference being, you call him God, and we call him Allah. Jews call him Jehovah. If you could understand Hebrew, you'd probably call him Jehovah too. If you could understand Arabic, you'd probably call him Allah. But since the white man, your friend, took your language away from you during slavery, the only language you know is his language, you know, your friend's language. So you call him, you call for the same God he calls for. When he's putting a rope around your neck, you call for God, he calls for God. And you wonder why the one you call on never answers you. Well, when I was in the Black Muslim movement, they didn't have the real religion of Islam in that movement. It was something else. But the real religion of Islam doesn't teach anyone to judge another human being by the color of his skin. The yardstick that is used by the Muslim to measure another man is not the man's color, but the man's deeds, the man's conscious behavior, the man's intention. And when you use that as a standard of measurement or judgment, you never go wrong. But when you just judge a man because of the color of his skin, then you're committing a crime, because that's the worst kind of judgment. If you judge him just because he was a Jew, that's not as bad as judging him because he's black. Because a Jew can hide his religion. He can say he's something else, which a lot of them do that. They say they're something else. But the black man can't hide. When they start indicting us because of our color, that means we're indicted before we're born, which is the worst kind of crime that can be committed. Elijah Muhammad had taught us that the white man could not enter into Mecca in Arabia, and all of us who followed him, we believed it. And he said the reason he couldn't enter was because he's white and inherently evil, and it's impossible to change him. And the only thing that would change him is Islam, and he can't accept Islam because by nature he's evil. And therefore, by not being able to accept Islam and become a Muslim, he could never enter Mecca. And this is how he taught us. And You know, so when I got over there and went to Mecca and saw these people who blind and blue-eyed and pale skin and all those things, I said, well, but I watched them closely, and I noticed that there was, though they were white, and they would call themselves white, there was a difference between them and the white one over here. And that basic difference was this. In Asia or the Arab world or in Africa, where the Muslims are, if you find one who says he's white, all he's doing is using an adjective which to describe something that's incidental about him, one of his incidental characteristics. So there's nothing else to it. He's just white. But when you get the white man over here in America and he says he's white, he means something else. You can listen to the sound of his voice when he says he's white. He means he's boss. That's right. That's what white means in this language. You know the expression free, white, and 21. He made that up. He's letting you know all of them mean the same. White means free, boss. He's up there. So that when he says he's white, he has a little different sound in his voice. And I know you know what I'm talking about. Despite the fact that I saw that Islam was a religion of brotherhood, I also had to face reality. And when I got back into this American society, I'm not in a society that practices brotherhood. I'm in a society that might preach it on Sunday, but they don't practice it on no day, on any day. And so since I could see that America itself is a society where there is no brotherhood, and that this society is controlled primarily by racists and segregationists, and it is, this is a society whose government doesn't hesitate to inflict the most brutal form of punishment and oppression upon dark-skinned people all over the world. To wit, right now, what's going on in and around Saigon and Hanoi and in the Congo and in elsewhere. They are violent when their interests are at stake. But all of that violence that they display at the international level, when you and I want just a little bit of freedom, we're supposed to be nonviolent. They're violent. They're violent in Korea. They're violent in Germany. They're violent in the South Pacific. They're violent in Cuba. They're violent wherever they go. But when it comes time for you and me to protect ourselves against lynchers, they tell us to be nonviolent. We should defend ourselves. And when I say that we should defend ourselves against the violence of others, they use their press skillfully to make the world think that I'm calling on violence, period. And I wouldn't call on anybody to be violent without a cause. But I think the black man in this country, above and beyond people all over the world, will be more justified when he stands up and starts to protect himself, no matter how many necks he has to break and heads he has to crack. I saw in the paper where they, on the television, where they took this black woman down in Selma, Alabama, and knocked her right down on the ground, dragging her down the street. You saw it. You're trying to pretend like you didn't see it because you knew you should have done something about it and didn't. It showed the sheriff and his henchmen throwing this black woman on the ground. On the ground. And Negro men standing around, doing nothing about it, saying, well, let's overcome them with our capacity to love. What kind of phrase is that? Overcome them with our capacity to love. And then it disgraces the rest of us because all over the world, the picture is flashed, showing a black woman with some white brutes with their knees on her, holding her down, and black, full-grown black men standing around watching it. Why, you are lucky they let you stay on earth, much less stay in the country. When I saw it, I dispatched a wire to Rockwell. Rockwell was one of the agitators down there. Rockwell, this Lincoln Rockwell. And the wire said, in essence, that this is to warn him that I am no longer held in check from fighting white supremacists by Elijah Muhammad's separatist black Muslim movement. And that if Rockwell's presence in Alabama causes harm to come to Dr. King or any other black person in Alabama who's doing nothing other than trying to enjoy their rights, then Rockwell and his Ku Klux Klan friends would be met with maximum retaliation from those of us who are not handcuffed by this nonviolent philosophy. And I haven't heard from Rockwell since. And brothers and sisters, if you and I would just realize that once we learn to talk the language that they understand, they will then get the point. You can never reach a man if you don't speak his language. If a man speaks the language of brute force, you can't come to him with peace. Why, good night. He'll break you in two, as he has been doing all along. If a man speaks French, you can't speak to him in German. If he speaks Swahili, you can't communicate with him in Chinese. You have to find out, what does this man speak? And once you know his language, you learn how to speak his language. And he'll get the point. There'll be some dialogue, some communication, and some understanding will be developed. And you've been in this country long enough to know the language the Klan speaks. They only know one language. And what you and I have to start doing in 1965, I mean, that's what you have to do, because most of us already been doing it, is start learning a new language. Learn the language that they understand. And then when they come up on our doorstep to talk, we can talk. And they will get the point. There'll be a dialogue. There'll be some communication. And I'm quite certain there will then be some understanding. Why? Because the Klan is a cowardly outfit. They have perfected the art of making Negroes be afraid. And as long as the Negro's afraid, the Klan is safe. But the Klan itself is coward. They never come, one of them never come after one of you. They all come together. Sure, they're scared of you. And you sit there when they putting the rope around your neck saying, forgive them, Lord, they know not what they do. As long as they've been doing it, they're experts at it. They know what they're doing. No, since the federal government has shown that it isn't going to do anything about it but talk, then it is a duty. It's your and my duty as men, as human beings. It's our duty to our people to organize ourselves and let the government know that if they don't stop that Klan, we'll stop it ourselves. And then you'll see the government start doing something about it. But don't ever think that they're going to do it just on some kind of morality basis. No. We only mean vigorous action in self-defense. And that vigorous action, we feel, we're justified in initiating by any means necessary. And when we say this, the press calls us racists in reverse. With skillful manipulating of the press, they're able to make the victim look like the criminal, and the criminal look like the victim. Right now, when in New York, we had a couple cases where police grabbed the brother and beat him unmercifully, and then charged him with assaulting them. They use the press to make it look like he's the criminal and they're the victim. This is how they do it. And if you study how they do it here, then you'll know how they do it over here. It's the same game going all the time. And if you and I don't awaken and see what this man is doing to us, then it'll be too late. They may have the gas ovens already built before you realize that they are hot.
Good. Great. Not bad at all. A-okay. Tickety-boo. Fine, thanks. All good. It's going gangbusters. Just great. When people ask us how we're doing, we often say fine, even if it's not always the case. If you aren't fine, say something. To get help, call InfoSocial 811. Because talking is the first step towards getting better. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
If you made a compensation claim for abuse at an Indian residential school, the records of your claim are secure. they will be destroyed in September 2027 unless you choose to keep them or share them. To learn more, call toll-free 1-877-635-2648 or go to myrecordsmychoice.ca.
If you ask plenty musicians, them know it, but them can't do it. So people still searching for this truth here, which this reggae music, you know, bring cross to them. And the only purpose it serves is to tell the people about Rastafari. I've been a Rasta from ever since, you know, but it's not how long I've been a Rasta, it's how long it takes to grow up, because what is what is from beginning to the end. You can never change, because if you even adapt things later out, you don't feel it right out. So we're just Rasta from creation, you know. What means a common sense, man. That means when me explain things, me explain it in a very simple way. That means if I explain it to a baby will understand too, you know? So we were saying now, like the Bible. The Bible said, God same shall return as the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the conqueror line of a tribe of Judah. And him shall come in a new name. And this new name shall be dreadful among the heathen.
How important are the dreadlocks?
This is my identity, man. Yeah, this is my identity.
I don't come to bow, you know. I come to conquer. I come to conquer. My home is always where I am. My home is in my head. My home is what I think about. How I try to set my mind in the thinking that I think. That is my home. My home is not a material home or somewhere out there. You know, my home in my head.
Have you made a lot of money out of your music?
Money? I mean, how much is a lot of money to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Have you made, say, millions of dollars?
No.
Are you a rich man?
What do you mean rich? What do you mean?
You have a lot of possessions, a lot of money in the bank.
Position make you rich? I don't have that type of richness. My richness is life forever.
Songs you often refer to the Bible, but many of the young people who are coming to your concert don't believe in the Bible anymore.
Because the way they've been taught about the Bible, that is not the way of the Bible. You know what I mean? Because if I was living in that world where the everyday interpretation of the Bible go on, then I would have eaten the Bible too. But now that we have found the right way of the Bible,
in the Bible is to be loved, because the Bible is a record of man creation. It's the only book tell you, it's the only book can make, can show you where mankind begin without any prejudice or anything like that, any boastiness, pride or anything. It just have outgo, and that's it. Well, all the Christian people, not even a Christian, all the people who go to churches interpret the Bible and the preachers them. That is not the right way. Because the greatest thing is that life. See? It's life. Life I deal with. If the preacher read the Bible and tell you that you have to die to go to heaven, then it's not reading the Bible. Because the Bible tell you you have to live in a heaven. You don't die and go to heaven. You have to live in heaven. You know, a lot of places on earth could be. But Africa is our heaven. Because that's where we come from. You know, maybe if it's a Swiss. Maybe if you're from Switzerland and the people know God, then maybe you could live in peace, unity, harmony. You know. But, you know, people are stubborn on this earth. Of material vanity.
I don't want to wait in the day for you, cause it's
sick, you go to the doctor. So nobody wants to die. So if you don't want to die, then there's something happening there. So the best man to find out from if you can live is God. Now, to find out from God, you have to find God. Now, when we search in reality, we find Haile Selassie, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, Conqueror, Lion of Judah. That is our tradition.
How big is the influence of the Rasta communities in Jamaican culture and politics today, and perhaps you can give some examples?
Well, you know, as Rasta, we're dealing with not politics, but our own tradition from creation, from the root of mankind. So we as Rasta now, we return to our roots, which is God, you know. So, and as you know, politics divide and rule. Politics don't show people God. Politics tell you that somebody can do something for you. You know, what we know is God will do everything. So the best man to deal with is God. When you deal with God, you don't deal with politics, because politics divide and rule.
Do you have to smoke to be a Rasta?
No, man. But in this time, I mean, like, for instance, you're reaching a sense where you're strong enough, can take a little smoke. So when all them car pass, although you live in the city, you don't hear it because you're thinking differently if you just live so. Then, you know what I mean, the whole world confuse you and you're worried and you don't have no time to think. And herb is a thing that give you a little time for yourself so you can live, if you use it. The more you accept herb is the more you accept Rastafari. You dig what I say? We who accept herb. Herb is important, but herb is more important to the people who don't accept it yet, because that is the reality. I mean, it's not Sevelin, Sevelin is something that you crave, but you check it in your sense and say, herb is a plant. I mean, herbs are good for everything. Why these people who want to do so much good for everyone, who call themselves governments and this and that, why them say you must not use the herb? You see? And we check that and we can't find, we just see them just say, no, you mustn't use it, you mustn't use it because it make you rebel. Against what? I don't care who the guy is. Because my right is my right, like my life. You know, all I have is my life. That means if I can say, I don't want that or I don't want this. When I check it out, the biggest man was a baby one time. So I don't know where him get all of these big ideas, want to be rulers over people. See? And help and force devilism. Can't dig it. Can't take it. We're rebel, man. We're revolutionaries. You know?
Is that the way you'd see yourself?
Yeah, I see myself as a revolutionary. Who don't have no help. And not take no bribe from no one to fight it single-handed with music.
You must believe me.
Baby, I really, really love you now. I think you should stop your crying. Here's my kerchief to dry your eyes. You know that I love you, hey, Ruby. Here I am. Come and rub it for me, belly, like a guava jelly. Damsel. Here I stand, come rub it by my belly like a guava jelly. Strange. This train is bound to glory. This train, I'm talking about my. This train is bound to glory. This train. This train is bound to glory. This train carry no one holy. This train I'm talking about. This train. When I was just a kid, my mommy used to sing this song. Now I've grown to be a man. Well, it still lingers deep down in my soul. I said it lingers deep down here in my soul. I'm talking about this train is bound to glory. This train. This train is bound to glory. This train. This train is bound to glory. Oh, this year train carry no one only. This train I'm a talking about. This train. The stone that the builder refused will always be the head cornerstone. The stone that the builder refused will always be the head cornerstone.
You're a builder, baby. Here I am, a stone. Don't you pick and refuse me, 'cause the things people refuse are the things they should choose. Do you hear me? Hear what I say. Stone that the builder refuse will always be the hit cornerstone. Stone that the builder refuse, yeah, will always be the hit cornerstone. You're a builder, baby. Whoa, here I am, a stone. Don't you pick and refuse me, 'cause the things people refuse are the things they should use. The things people refuse are the things they should use. Do you hear me? Hear what I say. Stone that the builder refuse will always be the hit cornerstone. The stone that the builder refuse will always be the hit cornerstone.
Ready?
Come, come, come back here, my young lady. Come, come, come back here to me, my young lady. Yeah. Just while I thought everything was running smooth, come, come back here, my young lady. Come, come, come back here to me, my young lady. Just while I thought everything was running smooth.
See that one now.
Searching the whole darn day for a little woman of mine, 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 mine. Someone told me I could find her here, but it seems she disappeared. Said I searched the whole darn day, night is drawing nigh. I'd better go home, try tomorrow again. But when I reach that railroad station, I miss the last train. And then it seemed like dewdrops gonna fall on me. Yes, it seemed like teardrops gonna call on me now. I said I better make up my mind. What am I gonna do? Am I gonna rest up here, or am I gonna push on through? My mind said, hey man, you hit the road. Down there I miss the track, track, track. I'm lost, Lord, I'm lost, yeah. Love is such a heavy load. And then for crying out loud, come back to me. For crying out loud, hear my plea. For crying out loud, come back to me. Why do you try?
treat me so bad? Why do you treat me so bad? Bam, 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 boom. Let's stir it up. Stir it up, little darling, stir it up. You have that? Little darling, stir it up. Little darling, it's been a long, long time since I've got you on my mind. Oh, now you are here, it's so clear to see what we could do, just you and me. Yeah, let's stir it up, little darling, stir it up. Oh, come on, woman. Little darling, come on, stir it up, dry it up. Little darling, I'll push the wood, blaze the fire, satisfy your heart desire. I'll stir it, yeah, every minute, yeah. All you got to do, honey, keep it in it, let's